When did you decide? I mean, a lot of young hockey players in Canada, they make that decision at a young age that they want to play hockey. When did you make that decision that this was something that you wanted to do?
Obviously, you know, you love the game as a kid. And for me, I was an only child. And being able to go play hockey was, you know, my activity of being with my friends and interacting socially. So, you know, it's not only just getting out of the house, but you love the game and enjoying it with your teammates. And then as I got older and started to realize that, you know, I could continue playing competitively, I never really even thought that professional hockey was an option, but I just kept plugging away, hoping that one day I would get an opportunity to continue playing hockey, never thinking, you know, for a moment that I would get to play in the NHL.
That kind of ties into my next question, because, I mean, your last season in the World Hockey League, you scored 25 goals. You know, you had a really good season. You weren't thinking draft at all?
So I guess I was probably borderline. There were guys like Rudy Poschek that played for the Rangers and Craig Berube that were probably, as 18-year-olds, their draft year, they had better seasons than I did. We all fought each other, and I think you could say, you know, everybody won and lost their share. But offensive production and statistics-wise, they had a better season than I had. My draft year I didn't have a great year of junior hockey, but by the time I was a 20-year-old, we did have some interest from various NHL teams.
You played with a lot of former NHLers while you were in juniors, ironically, Travis Green, also Brent Gilchrist. How was that a learning experience for you during that time? How do you think that prepared you for the NHL?
Well, I guess at the time the biggest thing was, you know, Brent Gilchrist was drafted by Montreal. The things were that, you know, you were so happy for Gilly and his career and the opportunities he was having. Greeny was a few years younger than me, three or four years younger, and he was cocky and I was attracted to him right away as far as a teammate. I loved his confidence, his sense of humor. He would put it right on the line and tell you, you know, like, I can do this. You know, put in a good word. I can do this. Put me on the PowerPoint. And he was a lot different. Where Brent Gilchrist was wicked humble, he just kept playing. He was always having knee issues and health issues. He was a guy with the old knee braces as a 19-year-old, just doing the best he could to get ready for games. But with Gilly, it was all about will and perseverance. He just would not quit. He had extremely high pain tolerance. And I remember every playoff game, him getting shot up just for junior hockey. It was crazy.
Wow.
But his desire is probably what reflected of what type of an NHL career he had and what type of a Stanley Cup champion he was, too.
Looking back, did you see, Travis Green is like a hotshot coaching prospect now. Did you ever foresee this? Did you think that one day maybe he'd be a coach?
No, but amazingly, like, that, there's a lot of guys that I played with that are coaches in the NHL or assistant coaches. The one thing I know about Travis is he has a high aptitude for the game. He understands the game and knows the game very well. And with maturing, as time came on, as he developed as a professional, I think he probably understood that he loved the game. I mean, you don't work as hard as he does and maintain a career at that level without learning. And I definitely think that's one of the things that Travis developed as a professional, was being a student of the game and different coaching styles and different ways of communicating. Because as a young player, Greeny, like I said, I love him, but he'll be the first to admit that kid was the cockiest ever. If you didn't know him, you wouldn't like him. But I had a strong bond with him because, like I said, as a young player, he had confidence. And, you know, when he was in Boston, I had a chance to go see him after a game when I talked to him, and I could tell how much he'd matured. So I'm not surprised. And I know he was a strong candidate for the Anaheim job. He's going to get a job in the NHL.
Absolutely. So now, you know, you're signed as a free agent. You join the Islanders, but you spend a couple of years up and down between the, you know, between the minors and the NHL. What was that like, those first couple of years?
Well, I couldn't believe I was actually getting paid to play hockey. So it was amazing. I remember my first year in Springfield, my first paycheck, I want to say it was $1,600, you know, every 2 weeks. And I was like, holy smokes. And I lived with two other guys, and my monthly budget was $333. So I had all this extra money, and I just kept going to strip bars every other day. And my teammates are like, hey, how long do you think you get paid for? And I was, you know, very naive. And I said, well, I don't know about you, but I got a 3-year contract. And they like smiled. They go, no. How long do you think you get paid for during the season? I go, I don't know, every 2 weeks. And they're like, no, buddy, you get every 2 weeks for 6 months. And then, so after 2 months, I'd already blown 2 months' salary.
Oh, my God.
Thinking I was, you know, going to get paid all that money year-round. And I think that fall in training camp, I had to borrow a couple $100 from my dad to get the cap. And
wow.
But, yeah, I couldn't believe I was getting paid to play hockey. I loved the game that much.
The Islanders, you know, in 88, 89, 90, 91, 92, lots of ups and downs. Playoffs 1 year, no playoffs the next. When do you think the Islanders turned into that direction that they were able to become, you know, a playoff contender?
Well, so when I got there, we finished in first place. That first year I was called up for the playoffs, and that was still a strong, you know, we were first place in the Patrick division.
Mm-hmm.
But we were a strong, you know, cup contender with aging veterans. And so there was that transition of young talent mixed with, you know, older players. And New Jersey upset us in that first round with that, you know, all the hype. They think they made the playoffs in the last regular season mm-hmm. game, and it was just, you know, they had all the momentum. And then we weren't, even though we missed the playoffs, we weren't like a bad team that next season, but there was major transition. And I think when Mr. Torrey left, obviously when, you know, Milbury and that regime took over, that has to be the darkest era of Islander hockey. And it was very, there was, you know, they say everything is built from the top, and a lot of that is relative. You got to have talent no matter who's running the program or running the team, but we had different owners. You know, there was the John Spanel era.
Yeah.
There was Mike Milbury. It was really unstable. And I think the biggest difference, you know, for those down years was that Mike was a different type of coach as to what I'd ever experienced, where he was very confrontational with young players. A lot of the things he did I'd never ever seen before. And at that point, I was, you know, a veteran, feeling like leadership and the tradition of being a competitive team and wanting to win a cup was always something that I thought we could attain. I never, you know, I'd say I was like always glass half full. I wasn't a realist.
Mm-hmm.
I believed in my teammates every single year that we were good enough to compete. And, you know, it changed. And then I think when they got rid of Mike and the stability of ownership, having, you know, when Mr. Wang came in and the stability of just having someone that's going to be there and hold people accountable to running a business and spending some money and drafting well and
mm-hmm.
you know, having your scouts do a good job and paying players, I mean, that's how you start to build, you know, something
sure.
that you can build off of.
You know, even though there were some, you know, dark times during your playing career, like you said, when you joined the team, they were in first place. But that 93 team, Islander fans, you know, still think was, you know, really something special. So you played in 74 games that season. You were a vital member in that 93 team. What was special about that 93 Islanders team?
Well, there were some trades and the personnel. But I always say it's your nucleus. You know, you have whatever, 18, 22 guys on a team. But that core So I could believe that we were going to win the cup every year, but I'm going to play, you know, 6 minutes a game and put up 20 fights, and I'm not going to really have an impact on the game every night. But when you have Benny Hogue, Steve Thomas, Pat LaFontaine, Derek King, Pierre Turgeon, Glenn Healy, Yuri Krupp, Darius, Vladimir Melikov, like when you have a strong core group of guys who really don't care what everybody else says, really believe on each other and believe in what Al was preaching and teaching on being accountable to each other, not listening to other people, not being wrapped up in statistics and just learning to play for each other. You know, it was kind of like everything came together at that one point. And the biggest part, you know, of that season was I think we should have beat the Capitals. I think we showed that we not only, you know, beat them handily, but we dominated. The push for us was that Pittsburgh series without Pierre. There wasn't a person in the media anywhere across North America that thought we could beat Phil and the Penguins. Not one person picked us, except us. And without Terge, those guys, you know, my teammates just locked on even harder, and they... It's a prime example of when someone doesn't believe in you and the guys in the group's will is greater than what everybody knows, you can have a magical result, and that's what it was.
So that Turgeon injury, I mean, I still remember it. I was 10 years old, and just, like, it broke my heart. But to be on the ice and to see what Dale Hunter did to Turgeon, like, what did that do to that team, to that Islander team at that moment?
Well, fortunately, Richie Pilon and I didn't go to jail that night because we worked up a scheme. I wasn't on the ice when that happened. It was, you know, a close game, and that kind of sealed the win. Richie was, and if you ever see the highlight, you'll see everybody's kind of shoving, and then you just see Richie Pilon coming. He's about 4 feet in the air, dives through the pile, and then a bunch of bodies disappear. And we were out of our, you know, we were... not always the most reasonable guys to begin with, but, you know, we'd set up a scenario where I was going to wait in the stick room and Richie was going to cause a scene as the Capitol players walked by our locker room, which is how they get to the bus. And I was going to come out of the stick room from behind and grab Dale Hunter and just go to town. And the security guys got wind of it and they ended up escorting him out the other way around the building the long way. But it was very disheartening to our team. I mean, we relied on everybody. So to lose someone as key and as big a part as your offense was Pierre, it was disheartening until you realize that you got to go back to work. And no matter who the injuries are, someone else is going to have to pick up the slack, and that's absolutely what happened in that series with Pittsburgh. Ray Ferraro had a great series. David Bullock scored that overtime winning goal. Steve Thomas played incredible. So yeah, it was pretty impressive.
Was it kind of like almost a coming of age for that team? Because you saw a lot of these guys had never really played in the playoffs before, especially like the kid line, like Marty McGinnis and Travis yeah. Green. I mean, Green was on the ice with Lemieux yeah. most of that series. To see him, what was he like yeah. during that series?
Well, I think that's where Travis really established himself, is because He's one of the guys that stepped up in that role and played a larger part. You know, he might not put up every statistic that Pierre could put up, but he absolutely demonstrated that he could play two-way hockey against, you know, arguably a dynasty, a team going for a three-peat, and did it. He had a great postseason, and I think that was really important for Marty and Travis. And Scott Lachance had a really good mm-hmm. playoff series. Yeah. I think that's where, you know, and the difference between the way Al coached and taught versus the way Mike was, where Al really supported young players, young talent. And Mike really liked to intimidate young players and young talent. And it doesn't, I don't think it's effective, not in today's area. There's enough pressure that we put on ourselves as athletes to succeed that you don't need some guy telling you, like, don't let me down, like, trust me on it. We're not trying to let you down. We're trying not to let each other down. That's our goal when we go to work at night.
I was just going to ask you about Arbor because I mean, two-part question. Like, what was it like to watch him on the bench? I mean, this is arguably the greatest coach of all time, and you're in the third round of the playoffs with him. And then also, too, I mean, I heard stories about Milbury playing Brian Berard on forward because he wouldn't play defense and stuff like that. What was it like, the strictest you ever seen Arbor with a young player?
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing with Al was he just emphasized, because he wanted the players. You know, he won Stanley Cups on different teams as a player. So mm-hmm. he wanted you as a player to experience that. That was a big deal for him. He knew how special it was for a group of men to go out there and accomplish a goal together and be successful. So, you know, and I realized Mike played professional and you know, not most times he reminds everybody that he lost the Stanley Cup because of a line change, and it wasn't him. It was one of his teammates, which I'm sure there were other contributing factors to why they didn't win the Cup that year.
Absolutely.
But it's typical, you know, of the mentality to point the finger at somebody, especially to out. Most teammates I play with would not throw you under the bus because they would rather feel bad than have you look bad. Those are the teammates that I enjoyed being around. And Al would always defend his players to the media. He might come in that room and horrify you because he was, even at a later age, he was a very intimidating personality. He didn't have a lot to say. And when he did, he commanded your attention and your respect. And I'll tell you, I don't know many players that walked around breathing lightly when Al was in our locker room. We were always aware of his presence. And it was earned. It's just the way it was earned. He wanted you to have the most success possible, but he wasn't about to hold your hand or you know, take credit when things went well. He wanted those players to experience that. It's a big difference, and it was something that it takes you to, you know, in life. When you look at life later, you realize how lucky you are to have played for someone like that. But he was so unselfish and happy for his players' success.
What do you think was the biggest differences between the 93 team and the 94 team? Obviously, you guys have a new goalie in Ron Hextall, and you guys lost some players in the expansion draft. But what was the biggest difference between 93 and 94?
Yeah, I think that chemistry. I think immediately, like, I know you have a lot of the same personnel, but, and I like Ron Hextall a lot. I think it's just a different personality on that team. You really have to want to pay the price and expand and understand what it takes to be successful in the postseason. And I don't know if everybody invested in that on that team. You know, in the postseason, everybody makes the same paycheck. So you really want to sacrifice your body and make a commitment to be successful.
Okay. What do you think these Islanders have to do? I mean, this group of guys, they just won their first playoff round since 93. I mean, what do you think that they have to do to continue their winning ways, to stay, you know, where they want to stay?
Well, I think they're obviously in the right direction. You need a little more depth. I think, you know, the way the game is playing now, it's absolutely about, you know, being able to put 3.5 solid lines out every night and then goaltending. You know, when you get down the stretch, being able to know consistently that you have goaltending that can win on any night, even if you can't produce offensively. But they have a really nice leadership group. I'm excited for them. I think keeping consistent players, keeping players together, that's kind of, that's where you develop that character. You know, even though free agency is a big part of hockey, I really don't think it's the best part of hockey.
Agreed. The game's changed a lot since you were playing. I mean, at any one time while you were on the Islanders, you had guys like Rich Pilon, Ken Baumgartner. You had two or three tough guys on a team. And by the end of your career in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was probably like one. And now most teams don't have an enforcer. How important do you think the enforcer role is in the NHL?
Yeah, I don't. Unfortunately, I don't see it being a big one anymore. I think it's little by little, it's self eliminating itself. So, unfortunately, you know, I know they're making a push to get rid of the fighting altogether, and that's unfortunate because I think when you eliminate that, that's when you see skilled players get taken advantage on a more regular basis. But the game is bigger and faster. You know, I still think fighting has a part of it, but absolutely not not at the same level where, you know, you're going to dress heavyweights and that part they're even trying to get rid of in the minors now. So, and honestly, like that's how I made a living, and I was proud to do it. But I understand it. You got to be able to do more in today's NHL than just fight.
How did you feel at this past year's All-Star game to see John Scott just be beloved by fans the way he was?
Yeah, no, I thought it was pretty. I thought it was the symbolism of what the players and what the fans think is that, you know, Gary Bettman, in his vision, is trying to completely change the game, and I don't know if that's in the best interest. So